spins on his heels and marches out of the room. The twins follow suit, then Easton. Only Reed and I remain, and I can't help but glance in his direction. His expression is full of disgust, anger, disappointment. But the one thing it's missing is surprise. Callum's announcement about a new royal baby had shocked the hell out of everyone, except Reed. Our gazes lock, and in that moment, I see the truth in his blue eyes. He'd already known.
Chapter 14. Reed. The minute Ella's eyes swing toward me, I know she's jumped to the wrong conclusion. I grab her wrist and drag her out of the parlor and into the room across the hall, which just so happens to be my mom's study, and the place Gid and I found her after she died. Perfect. This is exactly where my relationship with Ella will be saved. Not. Look, I start, but she's off and running before I can get another syllable out. That's your baby, isn't it? She hisses. No, I swear it, it's not mine. I don't believe you. Her hands are tiny fists at her side. I want to reach for her, but I don't think that'll go over well. I haven't touched her since you came here, I repeat for what feels like the thousandth time. I was done with her even before that. She slaps the nearest surface and dust fills the air. This room has been closed up for a long time. How do you know it's not yours? I shift uncomfortably because answering requires me to dredge up a bad memory, but I don't have much choice. When I saw her, she just had a small bump. Ella pales, and I know she's remembering that night when she discovered Brooke naked in my room. You don't know. You can't know. Not until you get a test done. I'm sick. She presses a hand to her stomach. I feel actually, honest to God, sick to my stomach. It's not mine. It must be my dad's. Or hell, it could be anyone's. She's willing to cheat on my dad, I say with desperation. So are you. I suck in a breath. That's a direct hit, and she knows it. But I'm not giving up. This is a fight I'm going to win, even if I have to play dirty. I'm not going to deny that I was a dick. Maybe I still am, but I'm not the father of Brooke's baby. I didn't cheat on you. I kept a secret about my past from you, and it was a crappy thing to do. I know that. It was wrong. I'm sorry. Just please, please forgive me, I plead. Put both of us out of our misery. It doesn't matter anymore. There's a dullness in her face that scares me. She shakes her head. Before I met you, my life was full of shitty things, but I dealt because what else could I do? It didn't matter that my dad was never around because I had my mom. I told myself that I should be grateful when she died because she was in so much pain. Then I came here and I looked at you and thought, I see myself beneath that hard, rough exterior. This boy lost his mother. He's angry and hurt, and I see him. Maybe he sees me, too. She folds her arms around her middle, trying to hold something in, keep me out. I don't know anything other than she's hurting. I reach for her, but she flinches as if even the thought of my touch is too painful. Fuck, she's hurting so bad, and I did that to her. I did. Do. See you. I whisper. She's not listening. And I thought, I'll just keep after him. Eventually I'll wear him down, convince him that we're a beautiful fairy tale. But we're not. We're nothing. We're smoke. Insubstantial and meaningless. She flicks her fingers against each other in a soundless snap. We aren't even a tragedy. We're less than nothing. Her words make my heart ache. She's right. I should walk away, but I can't. And the fact that she's in so much pain tells me that she needs me. Only a coward would stop fighting now. I caused all this pain, but I know that I can take it away if she'd give me the chance. I take a deep breath. I can play this two ways. I can walk away, or I can fight for you. Guess which one I'm doing. Ella glares at me in stony silence, so I keep talking. I messed up. I should have been honest with you from the start. Brooke told me she was pregnant that night. I panicked. My whole brain shut down. I scrambled for a way that didn't include me telling you that I ever touched her. I was ashamed, okay? Ashamed. Is that what you wanted to hear? Her lips curl. Yeah, well, you know what I am? I'm the stupid girl in the horror movie. You made me into that stupid girl. She points an accusing finger at me. I'm the one running back into the house where the guy with the knife is. You warned me. Over and over again you told me to stay away, but I couldn't listen. I thought I knew better. I was wrong. We shouldn't stay away from each other. We can't stay away from each other. You and I both know that. I walk toward her and stop when my toes nearly touch hers. Then in one swift movement I haul her against me. Oh, fuck. She feels so good pressed up against me. I want to shove a hand in her soft hair and kiss the shit out of her, but she's gazing up at me with livid, burning eyes. Stop touching me, she snaps. I'd rather die. I cover her mouth with my palm. Don't say things you'll regret. Don't say things we can't come back from, I warn. Her hand flies up and crashes against the side of my face. My chin jerks to the right on impact, but I don't let go. Her eyes are bright and her shoulders are shaking. I bet I look just as stupid and crazy and out of control at this moment as she does. What do you want from me? Tell me and I'll do it. Do you want me on my knees? Me kissing your feet? No, keep your pride, she says snidely. You'll need something to keep you warm at night. Oh wait, that's what you have Brooke for. She gives my chest a hard shove and scrambles away, and she's resting the door open before I can reach her. In the hall, Dad and Brooke grind to a halt. Dad looks at Ella's fleeing figure and then back at me with narrowed eyes. Brooke's all smiles. Angrily, I stomp past them to find Gid. Maybe he has answers for me. At this point, he's the only brother left who will talk to me. I find him standing outside on the rocky ridge that separates the lawn from the sliver of sand we call a beach. The Atlantic is cold and dark, lit up only by a partially covered moon. He doesn't turn to look at me when he asks, "Is the baby yours?" Why does everyone think that? Gee, bro, I can't imagine why anyone who knew you slept with Brooke might think that her baby is yours. It's not. I ran a hand through my hair. I haven't touched her in over 6 months. Not since St. Patrick's Day. We got lit, remember? I passed out upstairs. She climbed on top of me. I don't remember much about it except waking up naked with her next to me. Dad was outside calling us in to dinner. I was going to tell him then, that night. But I chickened out. Gideon doesn't answer. He simply keeps staring at the water. I used to think that Dinah and Brooke were trying to destroy this family, but now I think it's us. We're the ones killing this family. I don't know how to make it better, Gid. Tell me. Help me. He doesn't speak, so I try again, desperate to make a connection. Remember when Mom read us Swiss Family Robinson and we walked up and down the coast trying to find a perfect cave to live in? It was all five of us. We were going to kill the whale, eat berries, make our own clothes out of Spanish moss and seaweed. We're not kids anymore. I know that, but it doesn't mean we're not still family. You wanted to leave, he reminds me. That's all you fucking talked about, getting away from here. Now because Ella's around, you think it's worth staying? What kind of loyalty do you have to your family? He jumps onto the sand and lets the night swallow him up, leaving me alone with my miserable thoughts. Nobody forced me to sleep with Brooke. I made that decision all by myself. I took perverse satisfaction in figuratively sticking it to my dad by literally sticking it to his girlfriend. I wanted him to suffer. He deserved to after everything he did to our family. He drove Mom to the brink with his cheating and lies. I feel like the lies were the worst. If he hadn't repeatedly promised that he wasn't involved in all those things Steve was doing, and all those whorehouses around the world with all those high-class escorts, models, and actresses that a billionaire's money can buy, maybe Mom would have left him. And if she'd left, she'd probably still be alive today. But she's not. She's dead. And Dad's neglect and cheating killed her as solidly as the pills she took that night. I press my lips together. Of course, my revenge is meaningless since I haven't had the balls to tell him about me and Brooke. And every time I think about him finding out, I feel like puking. I've spent the last couple of years trying to destroy everything around me. Who knew success would taste so bitter?
Chapter 15. Ella. What's going on? Val demands at lunch on Friday. And don't say nothing, because you all look like a royally depressed mess. Even Easton looks like someone kicked his puppy. Is that a euphemism? I tried joking. Valerie glares at me. No, not really. I pick at my meal. I haven't been able to eat much this week, and I think it shows. Every time I try to eat, the vision of Brooke telling us all about her pregnancy pops up. Except it isn't Callum at her side. It's Reed. And then my terrible mind runs with it, showing me images of Reed holding the baby, pushing a stroller in the park with Brooke looking like a fitness model beside him, the two of them cooing over their stupid baby's first steps. No wonder I can't eat. This morning when I pulled my jeans on, they felt loose. The clothes are wearing me instead of the other way around. I'm not ready to tell Val about how the entire royal household is rotting from the inside out, but if I don't give her something, she might stab me with her fork. I thought being an only child sucked, but family drama is 100 times worse. Reed, she asks. Not just him. It's everyone. I hate the tension in the house, the way the brothers don't look at each other over breakfast. And I can't even escape, because I've lost my job. I guess I should start looking for a new one. This time it's not because I need the money, but because every time I walk into the house, I feel like 100-pound weight descends on my shoulders. And it's going to be even worse once the baby arrives. I don't know how I'm going to deal with that. Life sucks, but if it makes you feel any better, I blocked Tam's phone number. You did? It's about time. Tam's stupid suggestion of having an open relationship was basically his way of keeping Val locked down while he spread his skanky ass all over his college campus, and she doesn't deserve that. Because that does make me feel better. Yep, and it felt good. I was tormenting myself reading all his texts, and I could feel myself weakening. You know you can do better. I know. She takes a sip of her Diet Coke. So last night, I blocked him, and I slept well for the first time in a long time. I woke up this morning, and yeah, it still hurt, but the pain wasn't as bad. It's gonna get better. The words come out limply. That used to be my personal mantra. I don't know if I believe it anymore. She fiddles with the can. I hope so. Is there a real life block button? Because I need that in my life. Sunglasses. Really big sunglasses, I advise. Or wait, even better, a shield. I could use one at home against Reed. A reluctant smile spreads across her face as she considers my silly suggestion. Wouldn't it be awkward trying to maneuver in that thing? Nah, it's brilliant. Let's patent the sucker and make millions. Done. She holds out her hand, and I slap my palm against hers. God, Val, I think you're the best thing that happened to me since I moved here. I know. She gets a speculative look in her eyes, slides a glance toward the football table, and then returns to me. Let's go to the game tonight. No thanks. I take back every good thing I've said about you. Why not? First, I don't like football. Second, I don't want to cheer for people I don't like. Third, other than you, all the rest of Astor Park can die in a fiery blaze. You can pick me up at 6:30. No, I don't want to go to the game. Aw, come on. Both of us need a distraction. You need one from Reed, and I need one from Tam. Everyone goes to the Riders games. We can inspect the man stock that's available and pick one to ease our broken hearts with. Can't we just eat a barrel of ice cream? We'll do both. We're gonna eat our ice cream and get eaten. She waggles her eyebrows at me, and I laugh reluctantly, but inwardly my heart's protesting. The only touch I want is Reed's. The cheating bastard. Damn it. Maybe I do need a distraction. Okay. Let's go. Get out of the car, Val orders when she climbs into the passenger seat later that night. I need to get a better look at this outfit. You'll see it when we get to the game. Are you doing this to make Reed come in his football pants or to make the girls at Astor Park freak out? I ignore the reference to Reed. I definitely wasn't thinking of how I wanted to make him burn with jealousy. Nuh-uh, not at all. You told me I'm supposed to pick out a new man tonight. This is my man-hunting outfit. I wave a hand toward my clothes. I paired striped knee socks over black leggings, topped with an old jersey I found at the secondhand store I hit after school. I couldn't tuck the material into the top of the leggings without it looking like I had a bunch of socks stuffed down my pants, so I bought a big black belt and bunched the jersey around my hips. Two loose braids and smeared eye black, which in my case was a load of black eyeliner over a heavy priming base so it wouldn't budge. Under my eyes, complete my pin-up football look. I suggested one man, not a whole herd, Val says wryly. But maybe this works for my benefit. You pick the one you want and you leave the rest for me. Very funny. Seriously, I'm thinking we need to get the twins to escort us inside. I'm afraid of what the girls are going to do when they get a load of you. Val's prediction isn't that far off the mark. The football girlfriends scowl at me when we walk past the area where the girlfriends and parents wait for the players to run from the locker room onto the field. A few insults, slut, trailer trash, and what do you expect, trickle down the crowd from the other girls. These chicks are so jealous they won't even have to shove their fingers down their throats tonight, Val snarks. Their jealousy will eat away at all their extra calories. I shrug. I've heard worse, and I don't really care. You shouldn't. Next week, we'll be surrounded by a whole team of slutty football players. I'll have to up my game then. I don't mind a challenge. When we arrive at the student section, Jordan turns us away. You can't sit with us, she announces. I roll my eyes. Why, because I'm too trashy for your precious bleachers? That too, she smirks. But also, because you're wearing the wrong colors. I look up at the mass of students and realize she's right. They're all situated so that the color of their t-shirt spells out an A in gold against a black background. I'm wearing a white jersey, and Val's wearing a cropped gray knit sweater. Jordan's in a black catsuit, and the only thing missing from her latex dominatrix gear is a whip and a chair. I guess we missed the memo, because there had to be one, seeing as how everyone else fits perfectly into Jordan's scheme. I'm reluctantly impressed. It can't be easy to wrangle a couple hundred students into wearing color-coordinated shirts depending on where you're sitting on the stands. Maybe you should check the Astor Snap stories once in a while. She turns with a swish of her glossy hair. I didn't even know there was an Astor Snapchat account. Come on, Val says, tugging my arm. We'll sit with the parents. We find a place at the top where we can eat popcorn and pretend to cheer for the riders. What on earth is Jordan wearing? I giggle. Is she a part-time S&M mistress? Nah. Val throws a few kernels of popcorn into her mouth. The dance team performs at halftime before the band, so I'm guessing that's their costume. She's right. When halftime comes around, Jordan and her squad put on a routine with so much boob and ass shaking that I feel like I should slip some of Daddy G's business cards in their gym bags, in case their trust funds ever dry up. They'd get at least the $5 tips, I whisper to Val behind my hand. Only $5? I'd want at least 20 per dude before I'd strip. What are you talking about? You'd strip for free, I tease. Val has told me before that she has exhibitionist tendencies. When we go to the Moonglow Club's 18 and overnight, Val makes me dance in the cages suspended from the ceiling. True, but I wouldn't mind getting paid. She gives me a thoughtful look. How much did you say you earned while you were working at these clubs? I didn't. And stripping is a lot different from cage dancing in front of a bunch of hot high school and college guys, I caution. Most strip clubs reek of desperation and regret, and I'm not just referring to the stripper's dressing room. The guys on the floor waving their singles around over their $8 steak lunches are as needy as the girls on the stage. Val wrinkles her nose. I don't know. It'd be nice to have the extra cash, and you must have been making serious bank to be able to support yourself and your mom on it. The money is the only good thing about it. Besides, you wouldn't want to strip around here. Think if someone saw you, and then you had to have classes with him or something. That'd be 100 different kinds of awkward. She sighs. It was just an idea. I feel a stab of sympathy. I know that Val's status as the poor relation really bugs her. I wish I could give her part of my stash. It's not like I need it. But she's not the kind of person who'd accept a handout. She'd see it as charity, which she already has to accept from her aunt and uncle. How about I hire you to be my bodyguard? Because everyone's looking at me right now like they want to murder me, especially that one over there. I jerk my head toward the second row of the student section, where a familiar golden-haired girl keeps swiveling around to frown at me. Ha, Abby wouldn't hurt a flea. She's too passive. Do you think she wears that Eeyore expression when she comes? I slap a hand over my mouth to muffle my shout of laughter. But it's true. Reed's ex is pale, quiet, and mild-mannered, as opposite from me as you can get. Someone said that Abby reminds them of Reed's mom. At one time that made me nervous as hell, because Reed adored his mom. These days, I don't give a crap about trying to impress Reed Royal. Abby obviously still does, though. And she obviously views me as competition, because she won't stop staring at me. If she'd asked, I could have given her a pretty good tip about how to win Reed over. First and foremost, don't sleep with his brother. Did she really hook up with Easton when I was gone? I ask Val. Yep. What an idiot, right? I mean, that's a surefire way to send Reed running in the opposite direction. Val purses her lips. Or wait, maybe not. You made out with Easton and that didn't scare Reed off. Then she changes her tune again. But you're special. Abby isn't. No way is Reed getting back together with her now. Even Abby is too good for him, I grumble. He deserves to be alone for all of eternity. Val snickers. Actually, I was really hoping someone would break his legs in the game, but, unfortunately, it looks like he's still up and walking around. We could break them. Take a baseball bat to him in the middle of the night, I say wistfully. Sounds like you've already got this all planned out. I might have fantasized about it a few times, I admit. After we're done with Reed, can we drive up to state? Ovs. Then we'll put an ad on Craigslist offering our services to other women. We'll name our bat Vengeance. Your bloodthirstiness is turning me on so much right now. Save it for one of the herd, I tell her. You have your eye on any of them? No. I'm still considering my options. Meaning the only thing she can see right now is Tam. I have the same problem, except my vision is blocked by Reed. We slump in the bleacher seats and turn our attention back to the game. The Riders win, as expected, and talk after the game immediately turns toward winter formal that Astor Park puts on after Thanksgiving and before Christmas. The dance talk is like foreplay for Jordan. She's glowing when Val and I descend the stadium steps. Our progress is slowed by all the parents stopping to tell Jordan how much they liked her routine and how talented she is. Jordan thrusts out her boobs a little more with each compliment. The dads stare at her with lusty hunger, and she looks like she's getting off on it. Nice show, I tell Jordan as we draw even with her. She looks pretty fantastic in her form-fitting costume, and there's a dewy glow on her cheeks, left over from the exertion on the field. Her eyes flick over me with disdain and then dismissal. She turns to her cousin. You're too good for this piece of trash, Val. Why don't you come to Shay's party with me? Pass. I wouldn't climb into your car if we were on Fury Road and the War Boys were after me. A few kids snort with laughter behind us. That only makes Jordan angrier. I can't believe we're related. I know, I wonder about it too sometimes. How someone so nice like me could end up with a bitch like you for a cousin. Jordan lunges at Val, and I stupidly step between them. Jordan's fist hits the back of my head at the same time that Val charges forward. I bounce off them and land against the railing. "Holy shit!" some random guy yells. "Girl fight!" The stand's empty, and suddenly it's pure chaos. Popcorn is flying everywhere. There are arms and hands and nails in my face. A strong arm lifts me down over the fence where someone else catches me and swings me out of the way. I look up to see Reed. Easton comes up on my other side and slings his arm around my shoulder, separating me from Reed. They proceed to trade scowls. "So, are we going to the Montgomery's party?" Easton asks me. "I told you I don't like dressing up." He snickers and points to my getup. "Looks like you're already in costume, little sis." Oh man, he totally has a point. "Come on," he coaxes. "It'll be fun." I cave. "Fine, whatever. Where's Val?" I turn back to the stands to see that the administrators have broken up the fight. An arm jerks me around. Reed again.
"What the hell are you wearing? Whose jersey is that?" he demands.
"It's just a secondhand."
"Take it off."
"What? No way." I look to Easton for help, but he's frowning.
"Now that I think about it, you can't wear another school's jersey to our games. That's bad voodoo."
"You won," I remind him.
"Take it off right now," Reed orders.
His voice is muffled, because he's trying to tug his own jersey up over his head. "Forget it. I'm not putting your jersey on."
"Oh, yes, you are."
His shoulder pads are up around his ears.
"Damn it, East, help me out."
Easton ignores him.
"You need a ride, sis?"
"She'll ride with me,"
Reed says firmly. He shoves his jersey back down, and his expression dares me to challenge him. So I challenge him. "Sorry, pal, but that's not happening."
"Don't call me pal."
"Don't give me orders." He gives me another one.
"Val can drive your car to the party. You're coming with me."
"Oh my God," I burst out. "What's it gonna take for you to get the message, Reed? We're over." My frustration and annoyance are reaching all-time highs. I already have my eye on someone else. His nostrils flare.
"Like hell you do."
I look at the line of players standing along the track watching us, and an evil thought pops into my mind. My eyes narrow in on Wade, the quarterback. Wade's a whore. Straight up, he had to use Reed's Range Rover for sex one night outside the club because, according to Reed, Wade couldn't wait to get home before banging some girl. Smirking at Reed, I move away from the Royals, waltz right up to Wade, and launch myself at him. His muscular arms close reflexively around me, and when I bend down to kiss him, his lips part automatically. He tastes like sweat, smells like grass, and is a pretty fantastic kisser. His tongue stays firmly in his mouth, but he can use his lips like a master. No wonder girls leave perfectly nice clubs to have sex with him in a stranger's car. I grip his hair and tighten my legs around his waist. He groans in response, and his fingers bite into my ass. Cheering breaks out, only to be cut off abruptly. The next thing I know, Reed is ripping me out of Wade's arms.
"What the hell, Carlisle?"
he growls. Wade shrugs ruefully.
"She jumped me. I couldn't let her fall."
"You don't touch her. No one touches her."
Reed throws his helmet in some poor player's stomach and advances on Wade, his hands fisted. The big blonde quarterback laughs and puts up his hands.
"I didn't encourage her, man."
Reed glares and then points a finger at the rest of the team.
"Ella is a royal. She belongs to me. If any of you assholes want her, you have to go through me."
My jaw drops. "Screw you, Reed. I don't belong to anyone, least of all you." I kick him in the back of the knee, then turn to look at the line of football players. "I'm available. Who wants to go with the trashy stripper? I know tricks that even porn stars don't." Eyes light up, but then immediately transfer to Reed. Whatever his expression is,
It causes every gaze to drop to the ground. Not a single guy steps out of line. Cowards, I mutter. Then I whirl away and stomp toward Val, who's grinning at me from the sidelines. Screw these Astor Park kids. Screw them all to hell. Chapter 16. Savannah and Shay Montgomery live in an inland mansion on the grounds of the country club. At the main gate, Val reaches across me to hand the guard a white envelope. He shines some special light on it, and apparently the secret message he reads with his special country club decoder ring lets us through. Seriously, Val, what the hell is that? She flicks the invitation in my lap. The heavy cream is completely blank. UV ink, so it can't be copied. Really? I run my fingers over the stock and feel nothing but the paper itself. What's so special about a high school party that there needs to be guards and gates and top-secret invitations? I toss the invite into the dash and pull through the now-open gate. They like to limit the crowd, she replies. Wish they'd use their powers to keep assholes out, I mutter. I haven't seen Daniel Delacorte yet, but I know he's still at school, walking the halls of Astor, as if nothing happened between us. If the asshole has money, he's getting in. She's right, but it doesn't make me happier. The pounding bass pouring out of the Montgomery house greets us even before we turn onto their cul-de-sac. We have to park at the end of a long line of cars leading up a hill. Val guides me through the main room and onto the porch. The Montgomery house is ultra-modern, all weird angles and planes and windows and steel. The backyard pool is lit up from underneath, and there are spouts of water springing out of the concrete to arc into the water. But no one is swimming because it's too cold. I'm getting something to drink. What do you want? Val asks, pointing to a cooler. Beer is fine. I spot Reed in the far corner of the porch. A fairy with big-ass wings and a floral crown is talking to him. Ugh, it's Abby. Their heads are bent close enough that his dark brown hair is brushing the edges of her petals. That sounds vaguely pornographic. The scene is sickeningly similar to one of the first memories I have of Reed. Abby was his last girlfriend. Maybe she was his only girlfriend. Reed, unlike Easton, is picky. He slept with Abby, and then Brooke. I don't know the rest of his sexual history. Maybe that was it. Maybe he lost his virginity to Abby. Maybe there's a bond that will always draw them back together. Daniel, the rapist, once said those two belong together. Is that true? Do I care? Of course I do. And I hate myself for it. I turn away before I do something outrageous like march over to them and tear Abby's hair out and order Reed to stop talking to her because he's mine. I'm not sure that was ever true. Even during those private times, when his fingers were in my hair, and his tongue was in my mouth, and his hand was between my legs. Inside, the house is filled with tight corsets, fake blood-spattered clothes, and probably even some fake boobs. Almost everyone has a costume on, except for a few. The nonconformists include the royals. Those boys wear t-shirts and shredded jeans. When I first saw them, I labeled them thugs. They don't look like prep school kids. They look like dock workers with their heavy muscles, broad shoulders, and messy hair. People turn as we walk in, and I instantly regret my outfit. I'm the only slutty football player here, so, once again, I've made a spectacle of myself. It's strange because in the past I've been so good at blending in, but ever since I came here, I've been doing things that unwittingly put me in the spotlight. Fighting with Jordan, making out with Easton, hooking up with Reed, running away,
wearing this ridiculous outfit. I grab Val. I need to change, or at least wash my face. The heavy black stripes under my eyes look dumb compared to the perfectly made-up faces of all these princesses and ballerinas. It's like Disney threw up in here, the adult after-hours Disney. You look gorgeous, Val protests. No, if I'm gonna make it through these next 2 years, I need to tone it down. Val shakes her head in disagreement, but points a hand down the hall. I'll wait here for you. It's easy to find the bathroom because there's already a line. I slump against the wall. Why am I trying to make everyone notice me? Is it because I want Reed to pay attention? The line shortens, and finally the two girls in front of me push inside. I hear a snippet of conversation as the door opens. Abby with Easton, I don't believe you. Abby would never ruin her chances of getting back with Reed by sleeping with his brother. Why? It worked for that Ella girl. She made out with East at Moonglow, and then bam, she was with Reed. So what, like, Easton preps the girls for his brother? Who knows? Maybe they're like the twins, which is gross. There's a long pause. Oh my God, Cynthia, you think that's hot? I don't know. Like, come on, you wouldn't want to be the meat in that sandwich? If it's wrong, maybe I don't want to be right. There's complete silence, and then a huge fit of laughter, followed by one of the girls saying, "Fuck, marry, kill the royals." The door swings shut, but I can still hear them. I make a mental note to turn on the faucet when I pee, since the walls here are tissue thin. "There are 5 of them, Anna," Cynthia complains. "So pick 3. "Fine. Fuck Reed, kill Gideon, and marry Easton." Something seizes up inside me at the thought of another girl with Reed. Hard enough to see him with Abby. I don't need to envision him with a whole line of girls waiting to screw him. "Easton's a dog," Anna protests. "He's a doll," Cynthia says. "And reformed bad boys make the best husbands, according to my mama. Now you." Okay, maybe Cynthia isn't all that bad. Easton really is the sweetest guy under all that bravado. "Marry Gideon, because he's the oldest and will end up running the royal business. Screw Easton, because he has to have learned something for all the time he's spent up girl skirts. Kill the twins." "Both of them?" "Pretty much." I wince. Harsh. Anna is harsh. "Abby and Reed looked cozy outside, didn't they?" A honeyed voice whispers in my ear, interrupting my eavesdropping. Ugh, Jordan Carrington. She's not in costume, which is a shame. She would have made a fantastic witch. "Don't you have a boiling pot to stir?" I ask sweetly. "Don't you have a royal to screw?" "Maybe 1 or 2, I say in a breezy voice. "I bet that drives you crazy, doesn't it, Jordan? That the royals will screw everyone but you?" Her face flushes for a second, but she recovers quickly. "Are you seriously bragging about your sluttiness?" She rolls her eyes. "You should write a book about all your experience. It'll be a real feminist empowerment story. 50 Shades of Banging, the high school years." "Only 50? That sounds like a low number for a slut like me." Jordan flicks a curtain of dark hair over her shoulder. "I was giving you the benefit of the doubt. Figured that even you couldn't be so insecure that you needed 300 guys to prove your worth. I wonder if she'd believe me if I told her I'm still a virgin. Probably not. But it's true. Before Reed, I hadn't even given so much as a blowjob. We did a lot together, but not the final deed. I told him I was ready, but he wanted to wait. At the time, I thought it was because he was thoughtful. Now, well, I don't have the first clue why he didn't want my virginity. Maybe the girls in the bathroom are right. Maybe Reed likes for Easton to break them in for him. That thought churns painfully in my stomach. Your snarky little insults don't work on me, Jordan. I straighten from the wall. I'm taller than her, and I use it to my advantage. I fight back, remember? And I fight dirty. So go ahead, come at me. Let's see what happens. I'm shaking in my boots, she parries, but there is a note of concern,
We both hear it. I allow a vicious smile to spread. You should be. The door to the bathroom opens and I brush by the two gossipers into the powder room. My hands are shaking and sweaty. I wipe them against my shirt and then stare at my reflection in the mirror. Astor Park is not my crowd. It will never be my crowd. So why am I trying to change myself to fit in? Even if I dressed exactly like Jordan and wore soft makeup and pretty clothes, I still wouldn't get the kids here to accept me. I'm always going to be the trashy interloper. I use the toilet, wash my hands, and then leave, without changing one thing. Back in the main room, I survey the crowd. Tonight, the football players are the gods. I don't know if that's true in other months. If in December, after football is over, the school revolves around the basketball team or the lacrosse team or whatever other sport. But tonight, the rulers are the broad-shouldered football guys. My gaze takes in several. Their eyes meet mine and skip away. When I look behind me, I'm not surprised to see Reed. He's leaning against a wall and glaring at every male in the room. I march over to him. You said you'd do anything for me.
I would,
he says gruffly. Yeah, then prove it.
Leave you alone,
he guesses, a resigned look in his eyes. Yep. Don't talk to me. Don't touch me. Don't even look at me, or I swear to God, I'll find the first guy I can and screw him right in front of you. Something in my face or my voice must convey my seriousness. Because Reed gives me an abrupt nod.
For tonight, then.
Whatever, I mutter. And then, I stalk away. Chapter 17.
What's good?
Val asks when I step onto the porch. She presents me with a bottle of cold beer. I can't find one guy who will look me in the eye. I scan the crowd and spot Easton on the other side of the porch. His hand is on Shay Montgomery's hip, and they're looking intently at each other. I guess Reed really did lay down the law.
We should go over to Harrisville, Val suggests.
What's that?
Local college about 30 minutes away. No one there gives a rat's ass about the Astor Park social hierarchy.
She pauses. But I am kinda surprised that anyone is listening to Reed. Word was that the Royals were on their way out. I take a sip of my beer before answering. You realize how ridiculous that sounds, right? It's not, though. This pecking order is set at birth, even before. The governor of our state went to Astor. The judges he appoints are guys or girls he went to school with. What prep school you went to matters at the bigger, better colleges. What jobs you get depends on the clubs you belong to. The more secret and exclusive, the better. That's why I live with the Carringtons for 9 months out of the year, so I can give my kids the privileged start in life that my parents didn't have.
I guess. But you can still be happy without all this.
I wave the bottle toward the party. I was happy before I came here. Val makes a disbelieving noise. At my frown, she says,
Were you really happy by yourself? With your sick mom to take care of? Maybe you were coping? But you can't tell me you were truly blissfully happy.
Maybe I wasn't blissfully happy, but I was definitely happier than I am now. She gives a tiny shrug.
Okay, but the point is still the same. Astor is a smaller version of what we're all gonna face when we're adults. These jerks are gonna run our world unless we do something about it.
I exhale an irritated sigh, mostly because she's right. So how am I going to survive? I can't run away. So I guess I have to face these people and deal with them. If the Royals are on their way out, who's on the rise?
Jordan, of course. She's dating Scott Gastenberg.
Val gestures to a tall boy leaning against a fireplace mantel. I narrow my eyes at him. He looks really familiar in his cowboy getup, except the last time I saw him, he didn't have his jaw wired shut. The last time I saw him was at the club, and he was on the floor getting his face bashed in by Reed.
I can see why they're a couple, I say cattily. She does all the talking, and he can only smile and nod, the perfect boyfriend. I don't feel guilty at all that Reed broke that guy's face. Scott said horrible things about me. Not as horrible as Jordan did, but still bad. Val smirks and drinks her wine cooler in silent agreement. Then she tips her chin toward another guy sitting on the arm of a sofa. What do you think of him? I have no idea who he is. Nice cheekbones, though. The boy Val's referring to has ink-black hair and is wearing a pirate's costume, complete with a dangerous-looking sword strapped to his waist. The gleam off the metal hilt seems too real for a costume piece. Right? That's Hiro Kaminashi. His family's part of the conglomerate of Ikoto Auto. They opened a manufacturing plant 2 years ago and apparently have more money than some small countries. Is he nice? She shrugs. Don't know. Heard he has a decent dick, though. Hold my drink, I'm going in. I grab her wine cooler before it drops to the floor and watch as Val slides through the crowd and taps Hiro on the shoulder. A few seconds later, she's leading him into the next room, where couples are grinding against each other. I feel a pull in my belly. If Reed and I were together, we'd be in there. Our bodies would be glued together. I'd feel his excitement press against me. He'd hear my desire in the shortness of my breaths and my soft, irrepressible moans. We'd go outside and find a dark corner where his fingers would slip beneath my shirt and my hands would map out the hard planes of his muscles. And in the dark, away from the crowd, his mouth would seal itself against mine, and we would dance away all my feelings of loss and loneliness. I lied to Valerie. I have experienced moments of blissful happiness. The problem is that the fall off the cliff of joy hurts like a bitch. I shake myself to get rid of dangerous thoughts about Reed and look around the room again for my Hiro. This time, when I spot Easton, he's leaning against a pillar on the porch, and it's not Shay between his legs. It's Savannah, dressed in an ethereal white gown. She looks gorgeous but sad, like the abandoned princess she is. Easton, you dumb shit. But I'm as dumb as he is, looking for some guy to put my arms around to make me feel better. Well, I already have someone who cares about me, and I care about him, too. And I'm not gonna let him make another mistake tonight. Hey, Easton, I say as I approach. He rolls his head lazily toward me. His eyes are completely unfocused. Shit, I have no clue what he's on, and the boy is nearly a foot taller than me and 100 pounds heavier. I can't just drag him off. So I improvise. Val found a hottie, and I need a dance partner.
Not interested.
His hand slides up Savannah's side until his thumb rests under her boob. Her mouth is set in a mulish line, daring me to call her out on this. And I do, because both of them will regret this tomorrow. Come on, I urge Easton. I'm hungry. Let's go find something to eat. He leans forward and kisses Savannah's shoulder. He's done listening to me, if he ever started. I try Savannah instead. This isn't gonna make you feel better. They may have the same last name, but they aren't the same person. Her defiant expression wavers for a moment, until Easton drawls in a voice loud enough to carry.
What, you're the only girl we can pass around?
A few giggles and a gasp put a smile on his mouth. He's hit his mark, just as he intended. Maybe he's not so high after all. He knows exactly what he's doing, and apparently Savannah does too. Fine, screw up your lives, both of you. My hurt expression must penetrate whatever drug fog he's in, because his face pales with regret. Ella! I push past a couple of gawking students and run smack into Jordan, who's drinking a vodka mixer and smirking at me. Jealous that your royals are moving on? Everyone knows you were always just temporary. With the glass still between her fingers, she flicks some non-existent speck on my shoulder. The icy liquid sloshes over the brim to trickle underneath the neckline of my jersey and between my breasts. Slumming it is fun for a night or two, but after a while, the stench just gets too strong to handle.
You would know, wouldn't you? I say tersely, backing away.
Actually, I'm just hypothesizing, because getting dirty isn't my thing. Neither is getting wet.
Jordan smiles as she empties her drink down the front of my jersey.
An outrage jolts through me. My hand shoots out and fists her silk blouse. I drag her to me and rub my wet chest all over her.
Guess we're both wet now, I chirp.
This is $1,000 Balmain, she screeches as she shoves me away. You're such a bitch.
I give her a mean smile. You say that like it's a bad thing. Then I stalk off in search of Val, before Jordan can come up with another insult.
I find my friend in the middle of the dance floor, with Hero's hands all over her butt. It takes several hard taps to get Val's attention.
What's wrong? She asks. I want to leave. I can't stay here another minute.
Val looks reluctantly at Hero, and then back to me.
Okay, let me run to the bathroom and I'll be ready.
Hero steps forward.
Why don't I drive you home? I've got Tina and her boyfriend Cooper with me.
Val gives me a pleading glance. Is that okay?
Of course, I say, but I don't mean it. I need a friend to lean on. I want someone to hold my hand, brush the hair out of my face, find me a towel. I want to commiserate with someone about what a bitch Jordan is, and for someone to tell me that it's okay that I don't like her.
But Val's my friend, and she needs something tonight, too, something that I can't give her. So I offer a reassuring smile, and then walk away with the vodka mixer trickling between my boobs. The crowd doesn't part for me like a scene in the movie. I have to push and shove past cops, robbers, superheroes, and werewolves. More than a little beer is spilled on or near me, and by the time I reach the front door, I smell like I've been dunked in a vat of yeast. I stomp down the asphalt toward my car. My heel gets caught in a crack, and my ankle decides to give way. Cursing under my breath, I rip off my shoes and finish the rest of the walk barefoot, not even caring that the tiny pebbles stick to the bottom of my feet like little pointed leeches. When I get to the convertible, I toss the shoes in the back seat and grab the door handle.
Ew, what is that?
My hand comes away sticky. I fumble with my phone in my left hand and shine the screen against my right. There's something gooey and yellowish spread all over my fingers, and are those ants? Gross. I yelp and swipe my hand against my jersey, only now my palm is sticky and covered in fabric fibers. Grimly, I shine my phone on the car door. Honey is running down the side of it, and a line of ants swarm around the handle and into the crevice of the door. With a sense of foreboding, I lean over the top of the open convertible. The phone doesn't illuminate much, but I see more ants and shiny speckles of what looks like glitter on top of a pool of honey on the expensive leather. The back of the driver's seat is coated with the same shit. It's too much. All of it. This town. These fucking kids. This whole ridiculous life that's supposed to be so much better than the one I had before, because I've got a fat wallet. I tip my head back and release the scream of frustration that's been building since I rode that stupid bus back into Bayview.
Ella. Running footsteps pound on the pavement. What's wrong? Who hurt you? Where is he? I'll kill him.
Reed stumbles to a halt when he realizes I'm alone.
Why are you following me?
I demand. He's the last person I want to see right now, with ants crawling all around my feet, spilled beer drying on my skin, and my hand feeling gross and sticky.
I've been yelling your name for the last 5 minutes, but you were so lost in your head that you didn't hear me.
He grabs my shoulders.
Are you hurt?
His hands run down my arms and then onto my hips. He turns me, and I let him.
because I'm so hungry for someone to care about me that even this feels lovely, and I hate myself for it. I jerk away and stumble against the car door. Don't touch me, I'm fine. I screamed because of this. I flip an angry hand toward the car. He peers into the convertible, shining his own phone on the mess.
Who did this?
He growls. Maybe you did, I mutter, even as my brain tells me how silly the accusation is. Reed has no reason to destroy my car.
My dad gave you that car, he says with an irritated sigh, confirming my thoughts. Why would I ruin your wheels?
Who knows why you do anything, I answer snidely. I can't even begin to guess what goes on in your sick mind. He looks like he's struggling to keep his cool. Why he has any struggle, I have no clue. I'm the one dealing with an ant-infested car while he was cozying up to his ex-girlfriend. You sleep with Abby while I was gone? The question slips out before I can stop it. I regret it 100 times more when a ghost of a smile flits across his face.
No.
Then what were you two whispering about back there? I scream silently. I force myself to turn away and focus on fixing the problem. I don't need Reed, or anyone else for that matter. I've been taking care of myself for years. I wipe my hand again and then thumb my way to the search engine on my phone. Awkwardly, I type in the word taxi.
Not gonna ask me what we were talking about?
Nope, I've learned my lesson. I select the top service and call.
Yellow cab, can I help you?
I'm at... I cover the mouthpiece. What's the name of this place?
Ma'am, I'll need an address,
the dispatcher says impatiently. Just a minute. I mutter into the mouthpiece. Reed shakes his head and pulls the phone out of my hand.
Sorry, wrong number.
He hangs up and sticks the phone in the pocket of his jeans.
Abby was apologizing for hooking up with East. I told her not to worry about it.
You should worry about it. Give me my phone back. He ignores my request.
I've got other things on my mind, like wondering why my girl is kissing my quarterback.
Because he's hot. I stare at Reed's pocket, wondering how I'm getting my phone out of there. My gaze drifts to the left, where there's another noticeable bulge, one that seems to grow as I stare at it. One that I remember pressed against me, hard and hot. Parts of my body start to tighten and tingle. I clench my thighs together.
You don't like him,
Reed says hoarsely. You don't know what I like.
Oh yeah, I do.
Snake quick, he wraps an arm around my waist. His mouth slams against mine. I grip his head to push him away, but instead, I hold him there. We don't kiss so much as try to kill each other with our lips and tongues and teeth. His hands dig into my arms, my fingers gouge his scalp. That steel in his jeans is no longer a memory but a reality, and my whole body rejoices. Oh my God, I've missed this. His lips on mine, his warm body pressed up against me. I missed it, and I hate myself for it. I wrench my mouth away from him. Stop kissing me, I order. His lips curve upward.
Let go of me, then.
And when I don't do it immediately, he kisses me again, and his tongue slides through my parted lips. This time his hand is at the waistband of my leggings, yanking them down. I fumble for the bottom of his shirt, seeing his bare skin. Groaning, he hoists me up, and my legs somehow close around his waist. I feel the cool metal of the car hood under my bared butt. Reed's fingers are squeezing my thighs, and the tightness I felt before starts to ache. I thrash under his rough embrace, wanting something, searching for something, reaching for it. But it's elusive. His mouth leaves mine to find my neck, and then my shoulder.
That's right, baby. You're mine.
He growls against my skin. Yes, I'm his. His... baby. No. No, I'm not. I wiggle out from underneath his body, breathless and ashamed, as I frantically tug my leggings up. You have a baby, and it's not me. He stands up slowly, not bothering to pull down his shirt or button the jeans that I'd apparently undone.
For the last fucking time, Ella, I didn't get that woman pregnant. Why won't you believe me?
His voice rings with so much sincerity that I almost believe him. Almost being the key word. My mind suddenly snaps back to all those times Mom begged me to give her latest cheating boyfriend a second chance. He's changed, sweetie.